Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. One of the issues we talk about now and then on this program is sexual immorality. And if you think about it, almost every major liberal issue revolves around sexual immorality. Sex outside of marriage, trying to remove the consequences of fornication. And if you think about their issues, what are their big issues? Abortion. Well, that's sex without responsibility. Animal rights. Animal rights? Yeah, elevating animal rights makes people seem like, well, we're just animals too, and then we can all behave like animals and reject sexual morality. Evolution, again, turns men and women into animals, and now with sex as the only purpose for existence. Your evolutionary drive, you shouldn't deny it. Feminism. Bringing women down to the gutter to share in the same sexual promiscuity that's common among men. No-fault divorce, so that sex outside of marriage without consequences. Overpopulation. These are all liberal issues. Overpopulation, that demands abortion, so that people can have sex again without responsibility. Legalized pornography. Public education. How does that promote? Yeah, public education promotes a godless society which rejects sexual morality. Even welfare, every major issue that liberals fight for, like welfare, how does that relate to sexual immorality? Well, the government pays to raise the children conceived by men having sex with unmarried women. And why is it that liberal issues would all revolve around sexual immorality? I believe because we're in a war, good against evil, and ultimately human beings are sexual creatures, and if you could destroy a human being from within, if you could destroy him sexually, then you have defeated him. And liberalism versus conservatism is another way of saying the battle between good and evil, right and wrong. And the internet is really one of the major fronts of this battle, and to find out what is it like, most of us know, tragically, firsthand, what the internet is like and how dangerous it is. But let's go to Morality and Media. The president of Morality and Media, Bob Peters. Bob, welcome to Bob Enyart Live.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us, Bob. It's been about a year, I think, since we spoke last. Could you bring us up to speed on what's going on in the arena of porn on the web, and what are you guys doing to try to confront it?
Well, you know, at one level, there are two trends. One, I would say, is that perhaps not surprisingly, things continue to get worse. But from the information that we have, things are moving in the right direction in the Justice Department in terms of enforcement of federal obscenity laws. We're at one level, all we can do is wait to see what's going to be happening. But as we understand it, there are going to be prosecutions of internet pornographers for peddling the so-called adult hardcore pornography. And if that begins to happen, I wouldn't anticipate a porn-free internet. But I think if the government makes it clear that U.S. attorneys are serious about this problem, A lot of these pornographers are going to decide the risks aren't worth it. A significant number of others are going to be put out of business through law enforcement. And I think the remaining ones, it's going to become more and more a cat and mouse game instead of we can do anything we want on the internet, which is pretty much the rule of the game right now.
How big of a business is pornography generally?
You know, I have seen so many different statistics anywhere.
Yeah. It's not
particularly whether it's in the United States or worldwide, ranging anywhere from several billion to 70 billion. Now that's the worldwide statistic. I don't know how anybody realistically could be, you know, come up with an accurate figure, but I don't think there's any question that the pornography business within the United States is a multi-billion dollar industry, undoubtedly in the double figures.
And it's not exactly a regulated industry, so that there's not official reporting necessarily of industry reporting. We had on this program a few months ago, we had Dennis Kucinich on, the Democrat who was seeking his party's nomination for president. And we made the point to him that the liberals and Democrats, they act like they're so concerned about the worker and occupational safety and health. And why is it that actors, actresses who produce pornography videos, they get a paycheck for opening themselves up to the most dangerous, deadly viruses and diseases? In any other industry, it would be utterly prohibited to have employees who have to expose themselves in that dangerous way. But our government looks the other way. It's like the porn industry has a special status that they can put their employees under the most horrific risk, and the government doesn't care.
Well, you know, from my perspective, the porn industry is at best in a gray area. Like, well, you know, I should for use of illustration, I'll say that they are in a gray area, like the prostitution business is in a gray area, in the sense that on the one hand, what government ought to be doing is putting these people out of business.
Right.
You know, prostitution is against the law. Peddling hardcore pornography, obscenity, is against the law. But because the government doesn't take these problems too seriously, and certainly because of the immensity of the problems, prostitution and the porn people stay in business. But the other side of the what I call this gray industry is, which is what you're referring to, that there are real human beings who, you know, I've got a lot of sympathy for prostitutes at one level because I read, the vast majority of them are in this business because they've been dragged into it or because they're drug addicts or something like that. And obviously most of them need help, and a lot of the people in the porn industry need help.
Sure.
But government doesn't give it to them because government's first priority ought to be to put these horrible industries out of business.
Right, exactly.
Of course, if they did that, we wouldn't have all of this human suffering.
Well, Bob Peters, the day that I was interviewing Dennis Kucinich, we did it live on the air, that day in Hollywood, in the porn industry, one of their lead actors found out in a blood test, this didn't make the news until 2 or 3 days later, found out that he was HIV positive. And it closed down the porn industry for a few weeks as a number of porn actors and actresses found out that they contracted the AIDS virus.
And okay, I've got a file going back into the 80s on AIDS in the porn industry, and that really shouldn't come as a surprise
to
people.
No, right.
Because my recollection is that the AIDS virus was first discovered in the United States somewhere, I know it was the late 70s, whether it was 77, 78, 79. I still think I have the article when the first AIDS case was identified in New York City. So by the middle, late 80s, AIDS wasn't getting to the epidemic stages.
Oh, yeah.
And it had hit the porn industry. And at one level, what's so amazing that despite the fact that AIDS had hit the porn industry as far back as the 80s, by year 2004, nothing had been done to curb the problem.
Right. And so my point was the hypocrisy of the government, and especially liberals, because conservatives are willing to say we want to fight against the porn industry. But the hypocrisy where if you had a nurse in a hospital and it was such a deadly environment that bodily fluids from other people were being splashed in her face, OSHA would shut down the whole hospital because they would say that's too great a risk for this employee to have to undergo. But in the porn industry, they do that and worse, and they do it intentionally, And if these women do not succumb to that kind of risk, they won't get paid. So there is this utterly despicable hypocrisy where the entire government, even I think, obviously, are the conservatives in the government, the Republicans, really, there's not even a national debate about this. It's pretty much a silent issue.
Well, I tell you, at one level, it ought to, I don't think anybody has the totally accurate figure, but I don't think there's any question that the great majority of pornography, hardcore pornography in the United States, is produced in California, primarily around Los Angeles. So
right.
At one level, the primary culprit in all of this is the Los Angeles City and County, are the Los Angeles City and County governments and the California state government, because the vast amount of hardcore pornography is produced in California. So it really, I mean, I don't say that the federal government, you know, shouldn't be concerned, but thankfully, at one level, there isn't a lot of pornography being produced out of California today. Undoubtedly, it happens. I'm sure in New York City, a certain amount of pornography is produced, but the main thing we do in New York City is consume pornography. We're not a major producer of it.
When, in fact, I recall the earthquake that hit California back in, what was it, 1993, and the epicenter of that quake was right in the San Fernando Valley, right where, 90% of the porn videos in America are made. And so anyway, good point. They make it there. But why is it that pornography, why is morality and media standing against pornography? What's wrong with it? For people in the audience who think there's nothing wrong with it, what do you tell them?
Well, it's a long story, but my list of victims of pornography begins, in fact, with the men and women, probably most or many, if not most, who are in their teens, who perform in it. So that, to me, the first victim of pornography or category are the men and women, the teenagers that perform in this business. Another category of victims are the, at one level, countless millions of people who have become addicted to pornography of all ages.
Right.
Another category of victims are the spouses, the mates of people who are addicted to pornography. I tell you, it kind of shocks me, but I've seen it. You know, I don't think anybody could prove it, but you have secular professionals saying that the number one cause for divorce, apparently this addiction to internet pornography has become such a problem in marriages that even
right.
secular psychologists and marital counselors have begun to recognize it. So we have, breakup of marriages as a result of pornography. I mean, I'll tell you, if anybody went out and looked on the internet and looked at the kinds of pornography that's available, and you don't even need a credit card to look at a lot of it, I mean, a rational human being would conclude that, this is corrupting at least a significant number of our children. So, I mean, irrespective of whether the kids become hooked on it, they're getting the wrong message. And certainly another category of victims are both children and adults who are criminally assaulted by people who are addicted to pornography. So we have the performers, we have the people who are addicted to it, we have breakup of marriage, we have the moral corruption of children, and we have sexual crimes. Now, in addition to that, we have the breakdown of morality in our society and the erosion of decency. And certainly organized crime is pornography is a contributor to organized crime, and it's certainly a contributor to the epidemic of sexually transmitted diseases that we have in society. That's a mouthful, but that'll give you
a
summary of victims.
That's a good start. You mentioned children who are criminally assaulted, even crimes like rape against women. For years, there's been a known connection between the perpetrators of sexual crimes and pornography.
Oh, I wrote an article back in March of this year, and I really didn't expect to do it to become so long, but it became 35 pages single typed. It's on our obscenitycrimes.org website if anyone would want to look at it. It's Now, the article is the link between pornography and violent sexual crimes. But what triggered the article was an article in one of our New York City papers. A reporter had interviewed a retired commander of a Bronx homicide squad, and gentleman's name is Vernon Gebeth, and he wrote a book to help law enforcement people all around the country to investigate sexual homicides, in other words, murders where there's a sexual component. And I just assumed that anybody that was writing a book on that subject, they would at least address the subject of pornography. So we ordered a copy of the book, and long story short, I'll tell you, one crime after another that resulted in death, sexual crimes, there was an evident connection to pornography. That's what sparked this article, but the article goes far beyond
the book. His name is Vernon Gebeth?
Gebeth, yeah.
Did he make the link, or was it just there and obvious?
Yeah. I just say one. He didn't write this book as a, you know, to fight pornography.
Right.
He wrote the book to help law enforcement people in the investigation of criminal homicides where there's a sexual component, and one of the things that police officers, FBI agents need to be on the lookout for when they're investigating sexual crimes and or something that could lead them to the perpetrator is an addiction to pornography, because oftentimes people who commit rapes and sexual murders, in effect, they are acting out their pornographic fantasies.
Right, and fantasies, in fact, they've seen depicted on the pages of Playboy and Penthouse and in videos where the producers are giving them violent sexual fantasies as a function of their content. That's what
definitely.
The content is. It's raping women and children, killing them after a rape, for example.
Oh, yes. And you know, in a disturbing number of sexual crimes, I mean, there's one, crime against, a guy was a serial killer. And in one particular crime, somehow one of his victims got away. But she said at one point while he was sexually torturing her, he had a pornographic magazine opened. In other words, part of what he was doing was, through this live person, he was fulfilling the fantasies that he had nursed through this pornographic publication.
Right.
And this is what the victim said. This wasn't, this is what she told the police investigators.
Right. 10 years ago, in 1994, we had on Bob and Yurt Live a retired Miami Vice investigator, and he made the statement that, and people in our audience may recall that interview, but he made the statement that every single rape and child sexual assault case he was involved with, there was pornography involved every time without fail. And go ahead.
I've seen that and heard that from other investigators and prosecutors where, I mean, they'll either say that every case or virtually every case.
Yeah,
there was at least a link to pornography in terms of the person was a viewer of pornography.
Yeah, Jeffrey Dahmer, the homosexual who killed and ate other homosexuals. James Dobson interviewed years ago. Was it the Son of Sam?
Oh, it was Ted Bundy.
Ted Bundy laid out in some detail the anatomy of a murderer, how pornography gradually drew him further and further into depravity.
You mentioned the Son of Sam, which wasn't, to my knowledge, an overtly sexual type of crime. But interestingly, I have read that Berkowitz, his real name, that he was into pornography. And I'll say, I have a college classmate who became a criminal defense attorney, and we hadn't seen each other probably for 20 years, and we linked up and were talking about things. And he said, I mean, he has seen it in his practice, and I've heard this from other law enforcement people that even people who commit other types of crimes, non-sexual crimes, one of the things that is often found in their possession is pornography. And I, to me, you know, that's, I suppose, both a symptom and to some extent a part of their problem. But there's a lawlessness in pornography, and people who get caught up into pornography are at bare minimum going to at least be affected in their thinking by the lawlessness of pornography.
We, here in America, it's conservative Christians and some others, some groups that we, that Christians refer to as cults, some non-Christian religions, look at sexual immorality as a real risk, as a real danger to the health of an individual and to our culture at large. Why is it that way? Where did humanity get the notion that sexual immorality was destructive? Is that a new notion?
To my knowledge, the notion that sexual immorality was destructive is an old notion in terms of the history of our nation. What's new is the rejection, the Supreme Court's rejection of the notion that sexual immorality is destructive. You know, I mean, the sodomy case of earlier this year, the Supreme Court basically said that morality is not a sufficient justification for a law. Now, I'll hasten to add, they didn't quite say that, but they basically said certainly religiously based notions of morality as such are not a sufficient basis for government to act.
So that we know that the current U.S. Supreme Court, which has 9 justices, basically makes rulings on the side of defending the pornographers, defending protecting abortion. And in pornography, there was a child porn case before the U.S. Supreme Court where the pornography industry argued that if we have digitized images, so we make it look like a little child is being sodomized, if it's digital, then we should be allowed to produce it and sell it. And of course, that's just utterly devastating to law enforcement when they got a video of a child being raped. They got to figure out, was this digitized? Is it a real child? And the porn industry was thrilled that this current U.S. Supreme Court made this decision on their side.
Well, the Supreme Court, in my opinion, is basically rewriting the intention of the First Amendment, the purpose of the First Amendment, to reflect what I call radical libertarian views. I've read many, many things about the history of the First Amendment, a good number of them that have been discussed in older Supreme Court cases. And I don't think there's any honest question that or doubt as to the statement that the reason we have a First Amendment today is so that we can disagree with the government, so that we can hold opinions and values and religious beliefs that the majority doesn't share. And we won't have to go to jail or be killed because we disagree with government policy or with majority sentiments. I mean, that's right. Why we have a First Amendment.
Of course.
I think the history of the First Amendment is also clear that the First Amendment was not intended to protect obscenity, indecency, things like that. But the Supreme Court, in effect, is rewriting the First Amendment to protect those things.
Right. And, you know, when we see these decisions, just to throw this in, since we're in an election year, it's rather discouraging to note that of the 9 Supreme Court justices, it's a pro-abortion, pro-homosexual, pro-pornography, pro-godless curriculum in the public schools evolution. 7 of the 9 U.S. Supreme Court justices were appointed by Republican presidents. They were nominated by Republicans. And that's truly discouraging for people who think, hey, if we get a Republican president reelected, we're gonna fix the Supreme Court.
Well, you know, I don't want to overly defend the Republicans on this, but there are two mitigating factors. One is that our entire legal system is dominated by liberals,
right?
Particularly in academia, and therefore the choice that you know, the choices that whether they're a Democratic or a Republican president, I mean, most judges have been brainwashed to think the way the ACLU does in significant measure.
And
now,
since
another mitigating factor is that even when if you have a particular, you know, whether it's a Republican in the White House or a Democrat, you often have, certainly the Republicans have faced Democrats who control the Senate. And I think we learned back from President Reagan and Bush, and we're once again learning with George Bush II, that regardless of what the president may want to do, he's still got a deal with a Congress that's controlled by members of the other House.
Well, wouldn't it be great to have a courageous president who says, I will not nominate a judge who allows people to kill innocent children or sexually exploit women? Wouldn't that be great? I mean, that would be so neat for America to have that, to have it out, to talk through it. But it seems like our leaders, they just give in. They quietly give in, and they nominate pro-abortion, pro-homosexual, pro-pornography, pro-evolution, pro-atheist judges.
Well, I tell you, you know, again, I can remember two of the judges that are currently on the Supreme Court, both both with Justice Kennedy and Justice Souter. The word out, I don't mean the insider's word because I'm not a, you know, an inside political person, but the word that was going out was that both Kennedy was supposed to be as solid as a rock. He was the sleeper on the behalf of morality, family, and religion.
Right.
He's turned out to be a demon almost incarnate, on the certainly on morality and family issues. Souter, I mean, I tell you, he's so far to the left, you don't even want to, you can't even, you know, he doesn't register anymore.
Exactly.
I remember specifically the inside word was that Souter was solid, even though nobody knew really what, where he stood on a lot of
exactly
issues,
so. And right, and Bob Peters, we've said for 13 years now on the air that we can't trust these judicial nominees because every generation of law school graduates, they're getting increasingly aggressively godless. So we'll get new judges and we'll be in the same boat.
Well, I tell you, you know, for better, you know, I suppose, you know, with all of the polarization surrounding the selection of judges, more and more judges are, in one sense, they're out of the closet up front. But in order to get,
you know,
no,
what?
We're out of time.
Let me give you your website. We just a half hour show. We're just out of time. Your website is moralityandmedia.org. Moralityandmedia.org. And I want to thank you for joining us here on Bob and Yurt Live. We'd like to get you back on occasionally because this is an issue, obviously, that goes to the core of having healthy families in a healthy society.
Well, thanks for having me.
So, Bob, is that the best way for people to reach you guys, your website?
Well, it's the easiest way. We also have an obscenitycrimes.org website where people can report pornography on the Internet. That is, the obscenitycrimes.org website focuses on pornography. Morality and Media deals with the whole entertainment media and pornography.
All right. Well, we're going to try to get you on again soon, and we want to thank you very much for your time.
All right, thank you.
God bless you. Bob Peters, president of Morality in Media. And by the way, this Sunday, let's see, what are you doing this Sunday? Hopefully you're going to a good church. If you're wondering what church to go to, come on out to Denver Bible Church. You're more than welcome to attend. You're cordially invited. And check out our website, KGOV.com.